you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world. This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The spell you're under will be broken by Chris Jericho. And guess what? It's Friday.
It's Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Break it up, bring him up, break his neck, beat him up, break his neck, beat him up, break his neck, beat him up, break his neck. Neck. Woo! All right, Drew McIntyre here today. What an amazing, revealing interview. But before we get started with Drew, I just wanted to give another big thank you to you guys for checking out my sponsors. You can find them all in one place. Just go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. And click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. That will take you to Talk Is Jericho and links to all my sponsors, including Amazon. All the Amazon links are up there. Amazon Canada, Amazon UK, and everybody's going to Amazon, Amazon USA. Again, please go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk Is Jericho to find all my great sponsieros. Remember, Drew McIntyre coming up. Drew Galloway, his new nom de plume, his new nomenclature. Hey, if you're out there looking for a way to book Drew as he embarks on his new career, on his new opportunity, to his new brave new world, go to sbibookings.com. That's how you can find out all the ways to book Drew for anything, for matches, signings, seminars, garden parties, whatever it is that he's going to be doing. We're going to be talking all about that with Drew. So many cool things to be discussing before we get there. Reading noisecreep.com. It's a great like rock and roll website. I always read blabbermouth.net, loudwire.com, and noisecreep.com. And the reason why I got hip to noisecreep was Fozzie, Do You Want to Start a War? Is up for the most anticipated release of July 2014. Go to noisecreep.com and vote for Fozzy now, because we're losing to Judas Priest. We're fifth. We're behind Judas Priest, Guns N' Roses, Dog Fashion Disco, Theory of a Dead Man, and Fozzy. So we're number five. We want to be number one. We're number one. I don't know if we can beat Judas Priest, but it's worth a try. Anytime you can be even included in the same sentence as Judas Priest, it's always a very cool moment. New Fozzy record, of course, Do You Want to Start a War, coming out on July 22nd, which is going to be a huge monumental day for us. Very excited about all the cool things coming up. Also excited about playing on Saturday, this Saturday, in El Paso, man. El Paso is going to be a big festival. Playing at the KLAQ Street Festival in El Paso Saturday, this Saturday. July 24th on Thursday, returning to the Whiskey A Go-Go in West Hollywood, California. The famous Whiskey. I mean, come on, man. The Doors, Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Led Zeppelin, Alice Cooper. So many amazing bands played at the Whiskey. We played there a few years ago. One of my favorite gigs we've ever had. August 2nd in Syracuse at the Chevrolet Court, New York State Fairgrounds. That's WKRL K-Rockathon. The Crockathon. We will be there. Saturday, September 13th in Janesville, Wisconsin, WJJO Madison, Sonic Boom, the Sonic Boom Festival. We'll be playing at that. So a lot of cool stuff coming up for the Foz, along with the album release, July 22nd. Do you want to start a war? So I was looking on Noise Creep, voting for myself. For Do You Want to Start a War being one of the most anticipated release for July 2014. Because if you don't vote, kids, if you don't vote for yourself, how are you going to make a splash? And I found this really interesting article I wanted to read. It's called 10 Actors Who Killed People in Real Life. Wow, I mean, that sounds pretty, you know, controversial. So let's go through. Faye DeWitt, don't know her. But she was on Mork and Mindy and Designing Woman. In 1965, she was charged with stabbing her husband. He was a playwright, and she stabbed him with a letter opener. Murdered her author husband with a letter opener. How ironic is that? But obviously, she was let off because she was on Designing Women, which I think was in the 80s. Then we have Amy Locane, who was on Melrose Place, sentenced to 3 years in prison after being convicted of vehicular homicide in the 2010 death of a 60-year-old woman. So that was, I don't remember her. I didn't even watch, Melrose Place, but Charles S. Dutton, I remember him from Rock and from Alien 3. In the 70s, served hard time for manslaughter, illegal possession of a firearm, and acting as the ringleader of a prison riot. Wow. See, and much like, Talk Is Jericho alumni MVP, Charles got out of prison and turned his life around. Always cool to see. Lilo Brancato Jr., he was on The Sopranos and A Bronx Tale. He was charged with the death of an off-duty police officer in Yonkers, New York. He's in jail for 10 years, even more, 15 years. Skyler DeLeon from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, murdering a husband and wife on their yacht, which he expressed interest in purchasing. Yikes, if you want to buy a yacht, word of advice, do not murder the owners. Rebecca Gayhart, I remember her. 90s Noxzema girl, Rebecca Gayhart. Remember how hot she was in the 90s? Going through a huge 90s phase right now. But she ran over and killed a 9-year-old boy while driving through central L.A. Settled a wrongful death suit out of court. It's a terrible, terrible thing. But I do remember Rebecca Gayhart. Number 8, Robert Blake. 2012, the Beretta actor and Little Rascal. I forgot that Robert Blake was a Little Rascal. Remember Spanky? I remember the music. Alfalfa with the and Buckwheat, man. Buckwheat. So Robert Blake was in Little Rascals and was arrested for first-degree murder. Lane Garrison, prison break actor driving drunk and on coke, crashed his SUV, killed a 17-year-old passenger, sentenced to 40 months in prison. Here's one. Matthew Broderick. Wow. Yeah, the Matthew Broderick. Ferris Bueller, man. Vacationing in Ireland with then-girlfriend Jennifer Grey back in 1987. That's when Ferris Bueller was at its peak. Matthew Broderick accidentally drove his BMW rental head-on into a Volvo, leaving its passengers, a mother and daughter, dead. Ah. Broderick had a broken leg. Grey had his blood stains on her clothes. And she said the juxtaposition, amazing word, of the deep sorrow, the survivor's guilt, and being celebrated as the new big thing just didn't jibe. It didn't feel good to be the toast of the town after this horrible accident. My head was never the same. My ambition was never the same. Broderick, however, claimed in absentia. I don't know what that means. Does that mean you're crazy? Okay, so Nick, my amazing Tampa producer, East Coast producer, just looked in absentia up, and it says, law, while not present, while absent. So I guess because he was absent from the trial, he avoided any liabilities involving negligence. Is that how you do it? You just don't show up? I mean, that would be seems like a pretty easy way to beat a manslaughter rap. Just I just didn't make it. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't show up on time. So Matthew Broderick, sad story. And then number 10, John Wilkes Booth. Thespian John Wilkes Booth killed Abraham Lincoln back in April of 1865. Then he was killed in a manhunt days after the assassination. And regretfully, there's no IMDb page available for John Wilkes Booth. So we'll never know exactly what parts he was in. Although I think he was on the Love Boat once and did a tremendous job. If you're looking for a good show to watch on IMDb, Fargo. I love it. It was based on the original movie, the Coen Brothers movie, Fargo. But it doesn't have any of the same characters. Just the same tone and the same, I mean, the crazy accent. Oh, yeah. Oh, super. That sort of thing. Actually, all those people sound like my wife's in-laws because they're all from northern Minnesota. But just an amazingly crafted show. It was about 10 episodes on FX. Martin Freeman played kind of the Jerry Lundegaard weasel named Lester Nygaard. Billy Bob Thornton, amazing as the big heel, Lorne Malvo. So many great performances. Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks' son. If you saw him on Dexter, you see him again on this show. Keith Carradine. So many cool parts, and what a well-written show. Lots of twisted things on there. So if you're looking for a good show, if you miss Dexter, if you're missing Walking Dead, which is over right now, Sons of Anarchy, we're waiting for that to start up. American Horror Story, waiting for that to start up. Kind of out of shows. Californication, still looking good. But Fargo, number one. The Fargo, because Fargo's Kiss, It's Kiss, is on my list of Fargo's Kiss, It's Kiss. I can't resist. So, and also, should I watch Game of Thrones? Everyone's telling me you gotta watch Game of Thrones. It's amazing. It's better than Walking Dead. It's better than Dexter. It's better than a lot of good shows. My friend Wallace, who was the other member of the BTWF Orchestra, who we played the Geyser on the Snooki Show. And also the Snooki Show, very polarizing. A lot of people are like, I'm not gonna listen to the show because the Snooki's on it and I just don't want it. It's like, guys, calm down. If you like this show, if you like Talk is Jericho, if you like me, it's good. Trust me, it's all good in the hood. If I have a guest on my show, trust me, you are going to like this guest, okay? So just take it easy, be cool, and just trust me. Help me to help you enjoy the show. If I have Snooki on the show, it's not because I was forced to have her on, man. It's not because I didn't want to have her on. It's because she's a cool guest, she's super popular, and I love Jersey Shore, okay? Get over it. Jersey Shore was an awesome show, and damn, I wish I was a Guido. And if I was female, I'd say, damn, I wish I was a Guidette. But instead, I'm just a Canadian, eh? But I now know a lot of cool Jersey Shore terms and had a really good conversation with Snooki. So if you missed out, get off. Get off your ass and go check it out. It's fun. It's cool. Plus, she was in WrestleMania. How many of you can say that you wrestled in WrestleMania, huh? Snooki did. So there. So did Drew McIntyre, a.k.a. Drew Galloway. He also wrestled in a few WrestleManias in the WWE for 8 years, recently released and ready to tell his tale.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Yeah, man. Across the studio from me right here is the man. He's a tall, strapping young lad. He always had those dimples in there. Just hot. You're hot, man. Oh, Drew McIntyre is here. Can we still call you Drew McIntyre? Was that a WWE name or is that your name?
Yeah, that is a WWE name. So from now on, I will be Drew Galloway.
Okay, which is your real name?
That is my real name.
So we'll just call you Drew.
Yeah,
so,
we can still stick to Drew.
Okay, so when you were like when you came over to the WWE from the UK where you were wrestling, was your name Drew Galloway or was it Drew McIntyre?
It was Drew Galloway. Okay. I always went by my real name. Like wrestling was what I've done since I was a kid, 14 years old.
Right.
My part-time job at school, and I went straight from school to America at 21, straight to WWE.
So straight to WWE where they gave you the name of Drew McIntyre. And I mean, the big news, I mean, just to jump right in is I guess it was last week, last Thursday, they had this big, kind of house cleaning Black Thursday. A bunch of people got let go and you were one of those people, which to me, I think of all the people that were released, you were the most surprising. I couldn't believe that you had been, I guess, let go, fired. What's the proper word?
Personally, I like released.
Released, exactly.
But, yeah, I saw what you said, and I really appreciate it, Chris. To be honest, it was a bit of a shock, a big bit of a shock. Mm-hmm. You know, however, whatever anyone thinks about 3MB or myself and my wrestling ability, we were on everything, fulfilling a role that mm-hmm. they felt that they should be filling at the time, I guess, in their opinion. Mm-hmm. And we were on literally everything. So, yeah, to say it was a surprise was a very accurate statement.
So you had no indication at all that you were going to be getting released? Or
absolutely zero indication. We were working as hard as we could in the position we were in to do the best that we could with every situation presented to us. And, you know, considering, I think we did a pretty good job from what they were asking of us. And, yeah. I'm pretty shocked.
So tell us what happened. You get a phone call from who's even in charge of doing that now?
Well, I got a phone call from the office. It's on the internet if anyone wants to check exactly who called. And yeah, to be honest, in his tone, like he gave the politically correct, you know, call, but he was surprised as well as I was. Mm-hmm. You said yourself was. The outreach from people that I respect, like yourself, and direct messages on Twitter, people that won't name by name, they know who they are, mm-hmm. people in wrestling that I just respect so much, my fellow colleagues, everybody, how they felt personally about me and my, whatever, my look, my wrestling, however mm-hmm. they felt and what I should be doing. You know, I'm not in a position to choose what I should be doing. I do whatever I can. I'm so happy to be in the WWE. We'll do whatever they throw in front of me to the mm-hmm. best of my ability. And yeah, when I saw how everybody felt, I just was like, God, I wish they felt that way.
Because you probably, like, if you're that shocked, it's probably one of those things where you have to kind of, I mean, were you at home? Were you driving in your car?
I was at home. I'd just woken up. I had a message. I assumed it was something to the effect of, we need you on the weekend live events on Friday or something.
Yeah.
The last thing I expected was that, to be honest. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel right now. I'm nervous, but I'm so excited about the future. Like, all I've ever known is wrestling. Like, that's all I was ever going to be. I was born to be a wrestler. I was naturally blessed being 6'5", and the way I look physically and the way I look, whatever, facially, how everyone, you know, might perceive me as a,
You're a good-looking guy.
Spartacus-looking dude.
I'm Spartacus-looking. Yeah, you're a good-looking guy.
So I ain't going to say it. Thank you, Chris.
I can say it. In the most heterosexual ways, of course. Yeah, good-looking guy. I mean, you're kind of the prototype for what the WWE is quote unquote looking for. Tall, good body, good look, unique. You got this accent, you know, the hair, you got great hair.
Oh, thank you.
How long have you been in the WWE for?
Well, I just turned 29 exactly 1 week ago, last Friday.
And wow, and that was the day you got released or the day before you got released?
It was 2 weeks ago.
Okay, two weeks
ago. The 6th of June.
Okay, gotcha.
God, I don't even know the date right now. Yeah. It's been such a blur recently. It's been a whirlwind.
Well, I'm sure it has because, as you said, you've been in the WWE for 5 years, let's say.
To be honest, I got signed at 21.
Wow.
But it took a while to start my visa. Mm-hmm. I came to America. You might not remember initially, they put me on TV the second I got to America.
Mm-hmm.
Like at 22, literally the second I touched down, I was in OVW. The writers happened to be there. Mm-hmm. They saw me. They liked me. They put me on TV with Dave Taylor and The Kilt.
Mm.
And I was on for a few weeks, wrestled the Major Brothers
mm-hmm.
at the time. I went through them, spent some time on the road, was learning on my feet, was figuring out what on earth a hard camera was, since all I was ever taught was work four sides, brother. So I was trying to figure out as I went along. Then I got the opportunity to go to FCW and hone everything before I made my return, which was 4.5 years ago. I redebuted.
Well, so they put you on TV right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. The second I got here, Wade Barrett was getting to America 2 weeks after me, and I was on TV by the time he arrived.
There's some pressure for you, huh?
Like the writers were there. Like I was excited, you know, like I was confident. I've always been confident when it mm-hmm. comes to being between the ropes or with a microphone. But that's two things I've never worried about. Like I've never been the best politician. I've never been the best backstage.
Mm-hmm.
At all that game, all I ever was confident in my wrestling, confident in my talking, confident in myself, like quietly confident a lot, which is not necessarily a good thing a lot of the time in this business. Maybe I should have spoke up a lot more, but that's just me. I'm a gentle giant.
But that's what you got to have is confidence too. I mean, if you have that confidence, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You know that you can make it good or make a mark no matter what it is that they ask you to do. And you mentioned that with for example, 3MB. You were playing the part to the best of your abilities and doing a pretty good job with that.
No, thank you. And like, to be honest, with 3MB, it was unfortunate. So we were pretty much dead in the water before we began. Funny story, the day before 3MB was formed, the boss wanted to find out how I would be as a good guy, a babyface.
And this is Vince, wanted to find out what you'd be, right?
So he put a match together in Superstars with myself and Jinder, of all people, the day before 3MB was formed.
Right.
So we had a match in Superstars. It went real good. The crowd got with me, considering how they'd known me in the past. And it came off real good. And the feedback was, you know, this could be a really good thing for Drew. Next day, the boss decides Heath Slater, who was doing the one-man band gimmick at the time, needed a band, and he looks down the list. Everyone's expecting some obvious choices. I won't name the names, but people can pretty much figure out who might fit in that situation. But he looks down and goes, okay, Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal. And I think everybody in the room's jaws dropped.
And the strangest band ever.
Yeah, and the biggest problem of all was I'd actually had a broken wrist at the time. I had been broken probably 6 months prior. I hadn't said anything. I just tried to work through it. I knew something was wrong. And finally, the doc clocked me messing with it every single show. Looked at it, x-rayed it. Finally decided a couple of weeks before 3MB debuted, I need surgery. And I don't know if somebody wasn't willing to speak up. They weren't aware yet. But yeah, 3MB had started and the heater had a broken wrist and needed wrist surgery and was not allowed to be touched for 6 months or touch anybody else.
Wow.
So we were dead in the water before we even began, which was unfortunate. Because if you remember, we'd done the vignettes, we'd done some interesting stuff. And although I was a bit shocked with the idea initially, I was still willing to give it everything I had. And
I don't remember the vignettes. What kind of vignettes did they have for
it's
you
like
guys?
Like a behind the music style deal.
Oh, right.
Like they were like, they got pretty good reception. Everybody was laughing. They were still like, what are Drew doing this for? He should be doing the aggressive Scotsman. I was able to show another side of my personality, which I'm not against either.
That's always been one of Vince's things. I mean, you look at another guy who just was released in Brodus Clay. I think they brought him in to be kind of a real killer at first, and then suddenly he's the Funkasaurus and he's dancing with two chicks and kind of bopping down. You know, same with Big Matt, A-Train. What were they calling him? What was A-Train's name? The Japanese
Tenzai.
Yeah. Tenzai. That's right. Right. Was it Tenzai? Yeah, Tenzai. Yeah. And you see Vince sometimes get these ideas in his head of like, well, let's do something. Let's show some personality, damn it. Let's get these guys to do something outside the box. And that's what 3MB definitely was. And like you said, I remember those behind-the-scenes music type things. They were actually pretty good, and I thought you guys could have gone a lot farther with that.
Oh, yeah. We spoke to the boss about it as well. We had so many ideas he was receptive to. He seemed excited about it, to be honest. He was very into it. It didn't seem like it was like, what everyone thinks, a rib or whatever, a shot against any of us. But he was very much into it. But unfortunately, you know, going in with a broken wrist, with your heater, the guy's supposed to be beating everybody up.
Right.
Can't be touched or touch anyone for 6 months. And then the Shield debuted right after. Like, we were dead in the water to begin with. I literally couldn't do anything. I managed for 6 months. When I finally came back, we were already beyond repair.
So you were already kind of, you stayed on TV and continued doing the 3MB gimmick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it never stopped to this
day. You couldn't do anything, right?
Yeah, like they had me manage the whole time, do the promos, etc., which I thought to myself, okay, here we go. I'm going to do my best with this opportunity, try and show another side of my personality, which is probably shocking to anyone that had seen me previous and how serious I was. But yeah, we just didn't get the fair shake that we should have.
I mean, you guys could have even done stuff like try to really, I thought it would have been funny if you guys really would have tried to play in a band, even though I don't know if anybody plays any instruments, but even if not, like actually try, like take a lesson for 2 days. And even if you're the worst band ever, it would have been kind of funny.
Like, oh yeah. And I know that was like thought of and probably would have materialized had things not played out they did.
The way they did.
And yeah, there was so many ideas. Like I became friends with Adam Jones from Tool, who was willing to do anything with us for nothing. And they weren't biting. I just didn't understand that. It didn't seem like good business when he came to me and said, hey, Drew, I'm willing to do this to help you out. And I pitched it, and it didn't go any further.
Like Tool with special guest 3MB or whatever.
Yeah, like
it was,
he even said, come to my concert, bring some cameras, and we'll I'll play off stage. You pretend you're playing, and then we'll catch the footage later on, but it was actually me playing for you, doing the wild solo during the concert. I was like, man, that's so good. And it could have materialized had things played out a lot better, yeah, had my wrist not been broken.
But isn't it interesting, too, though, and this happens quite a bit even with Vince, where he'll... he'll start something and not really finish it. I still remember the one time that really stands out in my mind when Kofi Kingston, he put Randy Orton through a table in Madison Square Garden. And it was one of the biggest reactions. People were just going bananas. And it's like Kofi at that point was the top babyface or one of the top three.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next day comes by and things completely change. And then suddenly... you know, he's losing to, you know, Funaki on Superstars for whatever reason. And it's not just him. It happens all the time. I mean, I remember you and I didn't work hardly at all. But the one time I remember we did do something, I probably could even remember the building if I really thought about it. It was the night that Daniel Bryan was yelling and screaming at Triple H because they stopped the match halfway through. Remember, because his shoulder was hurt.
Yeah.
And we were doing something, Jericho versus 3MB. And the original idea was if Jericho loses, he has to take 3MB on tour with him on a Fozzy tour or something like that. And if I won, you guys would break up.
Yeah, disband, yeah.
And we were like what? Like, this is a 4-minute match or something. And first of all, I would never say, like, okay, if I lose, you come on tour with Fozzy because you're not even a real band. Like, it's not real. And if I win, you guys are disbanding, like, after 3 or 4 minutes, and the idea was for me to win. And then... it changed again, or what was it? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it. It was an interesting day. Like you said, like you've said the original ideas already, and then it just changed, I guess, in the end to a regular match with yourself and Heath.
It was right, and then, well, they're not going to break up. Why would they break up? And it's like, well, because I guess 3 hours earlier you said they should break up.
Like, it's hard to figure out where every idea is coming from. There's so many people involved. And like, you know yourself. In the end, we get used to finding out officially what's happening later in the day.
And yeah, sometimes
we become accustomed to working that way, and that becomes just the norm.
Sometimes, like, just a few hours before the actual show.
Oh, yeah.
Or even an hour.
Yeah, before. And you learn to work like that. Like, we become, like, that's why I think we're some of the best, you know, improvisers in the world. Especially someone like yourself has done so much and been in so many huge situations. Like, we just learn to think on our feet because of that, and he teaches us that, and no matter what we go forward and do, like, this opportunity I look at it as, that I have now, I might not have had. I'm still young enough to go out, make a name for myself in wrestling, but I have a lot of opportunities that have popped my way since this has happened already to explore other opportunities, and I feel like that. Being put in those situations has prepared me for that, because no actor could possibly get given a script.
Oh, are you kidding me?
3 weeks in advance or a week in advance, then the day of it, say, actually, you need to learn this.
Oh, yeah.
They would lose their mind and have their agent on the phone and have the union involved.
Right, and know that you get one take as well.
Oh, yeah, one take, exactly. We learn to work in those environments, and I'm very prepared for everything that's coming my way, and there's a few exciting opportunities that are coming very soon that I'm... beyond excited about.
What's the reaction been from, I mean, you've kind of touched on a little bit how people are just kind of, you got a lot of reaction from your peers and from fans. Now you're just mentioning a lot of opportunities already popping up. It's been like a week. How long was it before the news got out that you had been released? And then what kind of a response did you start to get afterwards?
Overwhelming and humbling even. Like, I guess Twitter's the best way to gauge it, as well as, like, the internet. I didn't look initially because I didn't know what people would be saying. I didn't want to know. I try not to consume myself with the internet or anything. But when I did eventually look, people were telling me what was going on and what people were saying. And it was just overwhelming what people said and the appreciation they have for, like, you know, what I've done, maybe not in the past couple of years necessarily, but what I've done and could do in the ring. And some of them are acting like I could be, you know, I'm dead and I'm never going to wrestle again. But don't worry, like, now I have an opportunity to kind of go out. I'm not going to stop wrestling. I'm going to be continuing, like, as of this day. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to make big mark, wrestling-wise. I've almost got a chip on my shoulder to prove a point. Like, I will be back one day. Now was not the right time. but they have presented me an opportunity to go out and really show what I can do. And hopefully, like, I know they're always watching.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to see, you know, what I'm going to do and the places I'm going to go. And I'm very excited and very excited about the future. And when I come back, it's going to mean a whole lot more than the first time.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, you're not the first guy to ever be released and then come back bigger than ever. You know, sometimes I think you're right. Maybe they do it as a test. You know, like, we don't know what we can do with Drew. Probably didn't have to release you, but let's see how you react when you get released, what kind of a mark you can make. Because I think right off the bat, well, the first guy is Eddie Guerrero, who released because basically for substance issues, who then went, rebuilt his career and came back and became the champion. But the other guy, and it happened to him two, if not three times, was Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
I know they released him a few times.
Yeah, exactly. And I see it as, I've said it a couple of times already, it's an opportunity. Like, for the past while, I've felt almost like a robot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing the same thing for a while. I've been just going to work, doing what I do. When I get between the ropes, believe me, it's more than 100% every time, no matter what the situation. But I felt almost robotic and my brain started switching off. Like, if you remember when I was doing the Chosen One things, I prided myself on being different every match.
Mm-hmm.
My gimmick was, he uses the ring like a tag team partner, because myself and Fit Finlay and anyone else I would talk to, like Regal, we'd be like, okay, what can I do tonight that's never been done, or as far as I'm aware, has never been done, because everything's been done in wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But I would try and just recreate the wheel pretty much every single night, and I was so adamant that my work in the ring would just be above top notch, and there'd be some, at least one thing in the match people would say, wow, I've never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, like, I've not been doing that, and, you know, probably because of the position I was in, it's not anything to do with how I feel about WWE, how I feel about wrestling.
But let me just digress here, because you did still do that. I remember there was a couple times when I think we did some kind of a battle royal or something like that. Maybe it might have even been the Royal Rumble or something, where I drop kicked you off the apron side and you took like this crazy backflip bump. And I was like, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, I just wanted to do something memorable and do so. Because you always would want to do something memorable.
Thank you for
remembering
that.
A drop kick another time or something.
You
we
did
were talking.
The drop kick, like your trademark drop kick from the middle. I was on the apron. I pitched it to you and you were like, are you sure?
Yeah.
But yeah, I explained to you that as my, like, I never lost that mentality. It was a lot more difficult in my position.
Right.
Because you'd you don't want to ruffle feathers. Like, I did things in the past that I guess people weren't necessarily happy about because I didn't clear.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I was like, okay, within this situation, I know this is okay and this is okay. So I was, you know, smarter about decisions I made and things I would do on the show. And I just always wanted to do like something people would remember. I didn't want to go out and not be remembered. I pride myself.
Yeah.
And ring. Thank you for remembering that, because
absolutely.
Yeah. That night I did want to make people remember. I was in and essentially right back out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember people, like, oh, sorry, man. Like, remember everyone apologized to me. It's fine. And I was like, okay, Chris putting you out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought to myself, how can I make this mean something?
Mm-hmm.
And I sought you out, and you were perfectly happy to do it, and I appreciate that. And I've done it whenever I could. I don't know if you watched the last couple of pre-shows. VLC and the
VLC.
the match after. Like, not a lot of people are aware that I can do more athletic things. I can clear the top rope with ease and things of that nature.
But the thing is, too, is it wasn't just the moves, and you mentioned this. And that's why I thought that you were doing, like, I learned this in WCW when I was there in 97, 98, when I wasn't being given anything. It doesn't matter if you have 1 minute of TV time, you still have 1 minute. And that's a minute to be remembered or to try and stand out or to do something unique. And yes, you're very athletic, but also within the confines of working with 3MB in a WLC match, which is a TLC with little people, with midgets, as Hornswoggle would say. Using the word midgets makes some money, he told me, so I can use that term.
That is true.
I mean, how did you feel? I mean, obviously, you know, once again, it's almost like Brodus Clay. You have the 6'5" giant guy that your whole life, you know, you've been told, be tough, be aggressive. You know, you're the chosen one. And then now you're bumping for midgets, basically. How was that mentally, as far as kind of swallowing your pride? Or did you just go for it 1,000% knowing this is what your job was for the day?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't know how certain people felt in the office about me, but I knew there was something going on. And as Vince always says, you got PG show, so let's PG it up. Sometimes you, when you mess up, you got to eat crap and learn to like the taste.
Classic Vince.
Yeah, so my attitude was, when I started all this, one, give it 100%, make the most of it, and two, I will eat banquets of crap until he gives me that opportunity again. Unfortunately, that never materialized, but I know that opportunity will come again. And I did at times eat banquets of crap and happily ate it and with a big smile on my face. And maybe not at times, but for the past like couple of years, I was trying to maybe change perception. And that was my mission. I just wanted to do everything to the best of my ability, eat piles and piles of crap and just get that opportunity just to show what I can do. And I was willing to do it. And I would do it with a smile on my face every time and not complain. But no, obviously now wasn't the time, which is unfortunate, but I am honestly excited about the future.
What was your relationship with Vince like? Did you ever talk to him at all over the last little bit?
Over the last little bit, not as much. I just, my attitude, again, as I said, was just whatever they throw my way, just go out and do it the best I can. Don't give them anything to be annoyed about. Don't try and intentionally mess anything up or whatever that some people might do, or walk around with a, you know, dour face all day. Dour is a saying in Scotland. It means upset.
Dour face?
Dour.
Dour face. Because so, here we call it the poo-poo face.
Yes, I didn't want the poo-poo face. So, you know, I didn't want to be doing that all the time, no matter like how I felt. Like, I just kept telling myself, no matter what, you just got to eat as many much piles of crap as Vince throws at you, as about a company throws at you, because in the end, you're still in WWE. You still have an opportunity. You still have that TV time in front of millions. Why are you complaining? You could be, I don't know, back in Scotland doing a regular job like my friends I see when I'm back home. Like, who am I to complain? Like, I don't.
And you never know, too, how it is there in that company, because one day, you know, Vince could walk past the monitor and see you take, for example, the Battle Royal bump we were just talking about and go, why are we doing anything with Drew McIntyre? What's going on here? And that's how that company works. It's so crazy on how there's such a volume of new guys coming in and the turnover is so fast. Or like we said, the Kofi, the Drews, anybody that you want to say that kind of had a little bit of a push at first, and then suddenly it goes away. Why? We don't know. But then you kind of have to keep working your way back up the ladder to get that chance again.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. You've just never got to lose, like, faith. I never did. The whole time, no matter what happened, whether I was on Superstars for a long time, I would try and make it the best match I possibly could. Whether I was in the 3MB, with the broken wrist, I would try and be as entertaining as I could be on the outside just to show I am able to do personality-wise. I don't know, for a period, I got the perception of hard to understand because sometimes in real life, I have a tendency to mumble, etc. But I do, you know, pride myself in being well-spoken and intelligent, like an educated man. I worked hard to make sure everybody understands me. So when the time comes, I can, you know.
How was it when you first came over here? Did you come over here with Barrett and with
yes, we were all signed at the same
with
time.
Sheamus as well. So you guys knew each other beforehand?
Yes, we wrestled, all of us together. I started first, I guess. I started 13 years ago now, which is crazy.
It's amazing how young you guys start over there.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. I think they started a bit later. They're a lot, I wouldn't say a lot older. I know somewhere Sheamus is bashing his radio. But they're a few years older than me. I'd just been doing it a bit longer, and I'd been wrestling a few years. I met Sheamus at a show in Scotland. I've been over. We had a small TV show in Ireland, so I traveled over there. The promoter put us together and liked how we worked together. We're similar sized guys. We were very aggressive with each other.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's just how we wrestle. Like in Europe, how yourself, we pride ourselves. No matter what anyone thinks they know about wrestling, when they watch us, they're going to see
it. You want people to feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got into a bit of a program. He was the undefeated Irish champion. He'd been had the title for a couple of years. Nobody had come close to beating him. The promoter started building me up as the evil, like, Scotsman womanizer, came over to take the title, and I started to form a faction. So we got a French guy in, and Sheamus had told me about this English guy that lived in Wales. He saw him at a Welsh show. He was, you know, a big dude, well-spoken, probably try him out for the group. So that turned out to be Wade. We brought him over. He fit in perfect. On the first ever appearance, I introduced him as my good friend Steve Sanders. He wrestled as Stu Sanders at the time. It was unfortunate, but inevitably we formed a, you know, pretty entertaining group, and we took the title in the end. And just after that period, when I just turned 21, we had the tryout in Wembley, all of us together, and we were all signed at the same time.
Who organized the tryout?
It was Sheamus himself who told me the person to contact. And
Was it Drew McDonald, or was it?
No, it was Brookside, Mike Bucci that was in charge at the time.
Oh, okay.
So emailed him, got it organized, came over, and it was John Laurinaitis in charge at the time of the tryouts, and liked what he saw, I guess. signed all three of us as well as a few other guys. I think they had an idea for a European league at the time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they were going through this phase where they're going to have a European league, a Japanese league, a South American league.
Yeah,
like you know,
which worked out for us.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, were you signed instantly, like on the spot? Here's your contract, or we'll call you back in a week or two, or?
Yeah, I think I was the first one signed that day. Johnny pulled me aside, went for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Take a walk with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we went for a walk, and he was very complimentary, and the agents had put in a good word of what they'd seen in the ring. So I'd been wrestling a little while at the time. I was young. I was eager, overly aggressive, and knocked out Wade's tooth. He complains to this day about that. I say, come on, brother, that got you a job. But yeah, I was signed first, and then Wade, and then I think Sheamus just hadn't seen Johnny yet, and he was a bit worried. And then when he got Johnny, we were all signed together.
So within the course of like a day or 2 days or 3 days or whatever it was, you were all pretty much signed together.
Of course, like 2 or 3 hours.
On the same day?
Oh, same day.
So that day after you tried out.
Walked out the ring, Johnny said, take a walk.
Wow.
Was signed that quick.
That's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. It was mind-blowing. I was like,
how did you feel like walking in that day kind of nervous, here we are in Wembley, and walking out with a freaking contract?
God. Like looking around the ring, it's like I feel so bad for the people in the ring these days because I remember what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
Just being in the ring, seeing the... But back then, it was like the Undertakers and guys like from that era, yourselves, the Hunters, the Shawns. And you see them talking and laughing. They're laughing about anything else in the world, but in your mind, in the ring, it's like, oh my God, they're talking about me. They're laughing. I'm so terrible. But in reality, they're talking about anything else. But you.
Sure, exactly. Not even paying any attention to what's going on.
I feel so bad for everyone now. Is looking around nervously, uh-huh. And then I have a laugh, and I'm like, oh, they probably think I'm laughing at them.
I was lucky I never had to do that, like go through the actual tryout in the ring. And what Drew's talking about is there's, you know, you set up the ring before the show. Let's say it's a Raw in London. Show starts at 8. Everyone gets there at like 2. And at some point during the day, you show up, you go in the ring, and you do a tryout where you're in there with, you know, your guys, probably some guys you don't know. And who was watching you that day?
There was Finlay, Malenko, Steve Kern was there at the time as an agent.
Okay.
And
so you actually had some pretty big time names watching your.
Oh, yeah. There was a bunch of guys. Double was there, like Arn Anderson.
Okay.
Like they were all there. And they kind of put in a word before Johnny got there, and he watched like one match, which I think was luckily with Sheamus.
Yeah.
I think they got a couple of bigger guys in the ring initially who had never done anything.
And that's kind of something you'd probably be terrified of. Like, you have to, like, if I go in with Wade or Sheamus, we're going to kill it. Like, but if I go in with, you know, Stinky LaRue that I've never seen before.
One of Stinky LaRue's, like one of them was Rob Terry, who's like a nice guy.
Wow.
Moves around. He could sign that day as well. Like, moves around real good for such a giant of a man.
Yeah.
The other guy could not do a forward roll.
Ooh, so if you get
unfortunate, he's huge. If I ever see you, please don't kill me.
If you get stuck with the wrong guy, it could be the end. Of
oh yeah,
whole,
that could have been tragic. But they put it was Double actually picked two big guys. So, okay, you two guys are monsters. Let's see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Rob can do a forward roll. You can't get it. Okay, how about you and you?
And you're like,
Sheamus and I. And I was like, oh my God,
oh, thank God.
And it went pretty good, thankfully.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
Drew McIntyre here today. So how long did it take for you guys to get from, you know, England to the States? The three of you guys?
It was probably like a 10-month period. Like I was just turned 22 when I got here.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, I was on TV 3 weeks later.
But what is a 10-month process? To get your visas?
Oh, yeah,
just to get everything together?
Yeah, it's a long period. America's not the easiest country to just stroll on into.
Right, especially if to work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure, as you know, like you can't just come strolling into America and get work permits for nothing. You got to do something that no one else can do. So it takes a while. But thankfully, I'd built enough media at the time that I got a O visa, which was a step up from the P visa that all the other guys got because I had so much media from wrestling for so long.
How do you mean, like magazine clips? And
yeah, magazine clips, references from promoters. I've been working for Brian Dixon at All-Star for a long time.
The famous Brian Dixon.
The famous Brian Dixon.
Oof. Oof. Can you do a Brian Dixon imitation?
I'm one of the few guys that cannot do a Brian Dixon imitation.
I remember Robbie Brookside used to do it all the time. Oh, I can't remember what it was. Yeah. But so what do you mean? You have to show your media clips to the government?
Yeah, you send as much media as you have. Like, I didn't expect like any special treatment. I sent everything I had. I sent the reference letters, everything WWE told me to send.
Mm-hmm.
And just so happened they gave me the pop star visa, I guess. Mm-hmm. Can't sing a lick, but so well, that's the kind of level of. Oh yeah, exactly. It was a fake band.
You're in three.
So
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
technically, our band's a lot more famous than a lot of bands.
That's right. That's true. That's true.
But yeah, and that helped massively, and it helped me in the end getting a green card, which I'm so thankful that I have right now because
that's great.
Yeah, I can live here, and I will be based here. I will go back home. Like,
and they can never take that away from you, right? Once you get the green card, it's yours.
No, exactly. This is me for 10 years. And now, like, it's been unbelievable, the response. People, like, trying to work with myself. I'm going to throw out there quickly. I'm working with Bill Behrens. I believe you are aware of him.
Yeah.
At SBIBookings.com. So I want to just throw that out there.
If you want to try and book Drew Galloway, that's where you find it. Say it one more time. What's the?
SBIBookings.com.
Okay. And that's, and so you can now go and work wherever you want? Is there any kind of a hold back
period? Yeah, I have a
3-month
period where I can't do certain shows. Everybody's aware which ones they are.
Right, you probably can't do TNA or ROH or anything that's got some
like
kind
on
TV, right?
Yeah, anything is going to be in a competition.
But I saw Kurt Hawkins was working the next day at like Jersey All Pro Wrestling or something on those lines.
Oh, yeah,
so
he just wanted to get right back out there. He hadn't been on
but you, you're allowed. You're allowed to do that too. You can just go right back out.
Yeah, like I just wanted to take a minute. I've not had a breath in 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the guys who were just released, I've had a little bit of time off.
Mm-hmm. One of the guys, Evan Bourne, it's like I haven't seen him in 2 or 3 years, man.
Yeah, I think he got a pretty nasty injury.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what was going on there, but he is one of the most talented guys
I've
ever been in the ring with, and I cannot wait to be on like the show with him again. If anybody's seen our Superstars match one time, Tyson Kidd was another phenomenal talent. He also reached out to me and expressed how he felt.
Mm-hmm.
Just said it was one of the most unbelievable Superstars matches he had, which meant a lot because I value his opinion a lot, and whenever anybody sees myself against Evan on one of these shows, their mind are going to be blown. Speaking of opponents, I can't wait to wrestle so many guys. Like, I'm so excited to
wrestle. Tell us about that. Well, first of all, I mean, we were talking about, you mentioned you got a lot of people reaching out from your peers. Like, who reached out to you that you were, like, surprised to hear from?
Like, I don't want to sit and name everybody's name, but... Yeah, like I know there was a lot of agents had spoken through Heath on Twitter itself, direct message. I got like a few, and I speak to Bret Hart a lot, which is crazy because he's like somebody I idolized growing up. And
he's Bret Hart.
Yeah, exactly. He was my hero growing up.
Yeah.
So like,
so Bret reached out to you?
Sorry. Yeah, like I'd spoken to him. That's and great. He's always been such a supporter of mine and just.
So what are they saying to you, the guys that you're
just
hearing
don't,
from?
Like, pretty much don't give up. Just, like, you have a lot to offer. We like believe in you, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like that's what everybody's saying is we believe in you, which means a lot to hear. Like, we believe in your wrestling. We believe, like, you have a look to offer that's marketable. So it's one thing being you can be the best wrestler in the world, but if you don't have something to offer,
right,
marketable, like WWE is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. And no matter how I feel about 3MB, you know, I feel I could have been presented certain ways, but that's not my choice to make. I just do the best of what I'm given.
That's right.
And I have certain ideas that I'm going to be, you know, I can present myself any way I want, and I will be presenting myself, you know, in a certain way. I'll say right now, you know, I said before, I'm an educated man. I like to think I'm a bit of an intelligent arse kicker, let's call me. You know, I'm all about numbers right now. I want everyone to remember the numbers 6-12 and 13-14. That's all I'll say right now, but I got a lot of ideas. My brain switched on. I'm excited. I'm fired up. And if you want, like, a 6'5", 250-pound guy, I can move around, like, the cruiserweights, and we'll put on, like, the match of the show. I am so confident and so fired up that I'm your guy.
6'12 and 13'14". Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. You have to say anything, but I believe 6'12 was the day that you got released. So that's just what I'm thinking. Could be a coincidence, but it also could be your new mantra and your new motto for a reason.
Well, can't reveal that yet.
So, and like you said, man, I mean, it's really cool because I'm sure once you get released, you're probably shocked. You probably did you feel like a little embarrassed? Like, what kind of feelings do you have?
It's hard. Like, as you know, like I spent my adult life growing up in America with WWE, and
yeah,
like all those people are my friends and family. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
Like I'm so close with my family back home. Like overly like close. Like moving here was so hard, but these people became my family. From the boys in the locker room, the girls, the lighting people, the crew guys, the production, just everybody. We were just a big family, and not getting the chance to say goodbye hurts so much. And something you love so much not loving you hurts. So that does hurt. But, you know, you got to understand business. That's where I was at the time. They've probably felt that now was not the time. And I feel now I have a big opportunity. Still, I'm not 30 yet. I just turned 29.
That's
a lot of years under my belt. People tend to think I'm in my mid-30s. Oh, the boss doesn't. They may have been like, oh, God, Drew's at the end of his career. He's been here so long.
But that's the thing. You've been, you got here so young, you know, to be, after having 6, 7 years, 8 years in the WWE, still being 29, that makes you even more valuable.
As of last week, pretty much.
Oh, that's right.
June. I just turned 29. I'm not. But yeah, like I'm still young enough to pursue like wrestling opportunities, which I will never give up on that. But I've got one particular exciting project. I can't go into details about it, but like I'll be getting a producer credit on it.
Wow.
It's going to be like something about a Celtic warrior, let's say, and it's very exciting and it's potential to be fairly big.
Did that just pop up since you've been released?
It was mentioned to me, and WWE didn't seem keen on allowing me the time to do it, because these things are time consuming, as you know.
Sure.
Somebody has done acting themselves. But yeah, it's a very exciting project, and I'm perfect for the role. Me and the lead character have more in common than I could possibly explain on your show.
See, and that's another thing too. You mentioned about not having time, and about how you said you haven't had a breath in 7 years. A lot of people don't understand, to be in the WWE machine, is it's a lot of hard work, mentally, physically, travel wise, stress wise. I mean, it's a wheel, and you never really get a chance to take that breath, like you mentioned.
Oh yeah.
I mean, in some ways, it's almost a relief when you leave. I mean, I know that I've left a few times, you know, always kind of on my own volition. But the first time, if I hadn't left on my own, I think I was about ready to get, you know, either let go or close to it. And when you leave, it's like you step aside and go like, I just can't believe, like, I'm a real person now.
Yeah.
You know?
It's pretty crazy. Volition is a very good word.
Thank you. I'm not sure if I use it in the right context, but I'm trying to keep up with you here, the educated ass kicker. I gotta be smart.
But yeah, it's weird. Like, so weird. Like, my life has been 100 miles an hour for 7 years. Even generally, your injury is your off time.
Right, that's right.
Like when Sheamus got his shoulder injury, he didn't know what to do with himself. He was like one of the most, busy guys, most busy guys, one of the busiest guys in WWE. He just never stopped, and he had all this time off. He was like, wow, what do I do with myself?
That is true.
Like, I broke my wrist, and I was on TV the next week. That was my potential.
So you're still on the road, though, and you're still working, right?
Yeah, I never stopped, and it's just weird. Like, I'm going like stir crazy almost, because I'm not doing anything, but I'm trying to learn to relax and... you know, be normal for a brief period before I get right back into it.
Yeah.
And
So you mentioned that there's a whole bunch of people that you want to wrestle now that you're not with the WWE. You mentioned Evan Bourne, who I think will probably be Matt Sydal now, which is his real name, Matt Sydal.
Yes.
Sydal. Who else are you looking forward to working that's kind of out there?
God, I'm going to miss people's names.
We'll throw a couple out there
because I'm on the spot.
There's so many,
but yeah, there's just a wealth of people I'm excited to work. Like generally, I work good with the kind of flyers. Like I do like a little bit myself, but I'm also good at.
But you're a big guy, so
you're working their style and
base. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Like I was trying to think of the best way to verbalize it for the audience, but yeah, like I can base all their stuff, and then I can do certain unique things with them. And the number one person that came to mind is AJ Styles. Like I've never had the opportunity to get in the ring with him. And
another guy who just recently left his company in a kind of a wave of controversy. I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago, and same thing as you, ready to go out there and make a mark and do things, you know, kind of his way for a while, instead of worrying about what the powers that be want.
Yeah, absolutely. And that he's somebody, even before I started, even when I first started, he was a big name in the independent scene, and I've always wanted to work him. And now I'm in a position, I feel, you know, as a wrestler, where we can really tear it up. Before WWE, I might not necessarily been ready, even though I believe I was ready the whole time. Like,
right.
I might have believed I was ready in my head for the Chosen One push, but you know, in the ring, maybe I was, but maybe out the ring, I wasn't, because it was a lot of pressure.
Well, and you just hit another nail on there. Let's talk about the chosen one, first of all, and how much pressure there is outside of the ring in the WWE. Because, you know, you could have a great match, but it's the other 23 and a half hours of how you conduct yourself. And you got to worry about this, and you got to talk about that, and you got to stand up for yourself in this. But don't stand up for yourself too much. How did the whole chosen one thing come to play?
Well, I had no idea that he was going to do that until I was in
Gorilla. This is Vince. You were Vince McMahon's chosen one.
Yeah. Until I was in Gorilla, I'd done a few things where I was attacking R-Truth. I had no idea until I was about to walk out the curtain. He walked out first and said, wait for him to talk and then go out and react to it and do your promo.
Wow. Classic Vince. He loves to do the surprise.
Oh, yeah. Especially at that time. We had like promo class, if you remember that.
That's right.
So like we were good at thinking of our feet, the original students of promo class.
So first of all, tell us what promo class was all about.
Well, promo class was like Vince himself would take a class, just kind of educate us how he feels that we should be, you know, presenting our promos, presenting certain things to the audience and, you know, what he wants, which is what you want because you can't read his mind.
Yeah, he would handpick a bunch of guys and girls.
Yeah, there was about five of us in the original SmackDown one, about five in the original Raw one.
And he would teach the class.
Yeah, including Punk, who was doing 20-minute monologues each show.
He would have
Punk
in there.
He was in promo class. Yeah, just like he wanted to emphasize what he felt like he wanted on the show, and which was what you need because he's the boss. No matter how anyone feels, he's the boss.
Yes.
So like those promo classes were nerve-wracking. You get 1 minute, pick a topic, cut a promo on it. Like, Chris, stand up, cut a promo on that gimmick that Wade Barrett waves around all the time in front of
the judge's gavel that we're looking at right here. So you would have to do a one-minute promo on the gavel. Like, I am the hand of justice, and this is my gavel, and I will beat all of you in the WWE because I am the judge, jury, and executioner, or something like that.
God damn, that's so 80s.
That's so 80s.
So we were learning exactly what he wanted. So it was nerve-wracking, but it was a great experience. Everything was a great experience, WWE, and talking with Vince. I spent time with him talking at that point and kind of getting to know him, getting in his head, and it was a good experience.
So you were doing the promo class, and then you're in gorilla position, ready to go out for your match, you said, or to attack somebody?
Yeah, I was going out to do a promo.
Okay.
I just knew I had a promo. I had like certain verbiage, which we had certain freedom to adapt to our characters and how we felt we would actually talk. He went out, cut this promo, my mind melted. And luckily I went out and was able to keep it together because it was the most unbelievable thing.
But so you were going to go out and then Vince said, wait for me.
The writer told me just a second, Vince is going to go out.
So what did Vince say?
He didn't really say anything. He just, it was such a blur, I guess. He might have said something, but he just pretty much strolled past me, kind of looked at me with a smile. I was like, what's going on?
So what did he say when he was on the stage?
I've watched it a bunch, but right now, I honestly don't remember. He said pretty much, like, I'm not in 3MB, but I was known for being so aggressive in the ring. And that's kind of my style. Mm-hmm. Like, very aggressive, very believable, I like to think, in a lot of ways. And, you know, he said things like that. He's a very aggressive young man, and it reminds him a bit of himself and the way I attack things, especially my opponents. And presented me.
Here's the chosen one?
He didn't, I don't think, name me right there. Okay. I think that came after. But yeah, he just kind of put me over for the kind of my style of wrestling and the way I conducted myself at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Was very aggressive and still is very aggressive. The opportunities I had in 3MB, people would still see that I didn't change my wrestling style.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very aggressive person and pride myself in being believable and people remembering like what I do. And if they say, I know wrestling's fake, but you know, when Drew McIntyre hits somebody,
you can feel it.
Yeah. You see the mark appearing.
Yeah.
In safe places.
Yeah. So you were the chosen one. And then was there ever an angle behind that where you were working against somebody in specific, or how long did that last for?
It was R-Truth initially.
Mm-hmm. Because Truth at the time was getting a big push too.
Oh yeah. Like, it was shocking when he was doing his rap gimmick. It was actually Shawn Michaels' idea. Mm-hmm. He kind of helped out for the first couple of weeks, but he was on Raw, and the shows were split at the time. I didn't have him after that, unfortunately, because he was so helpful.
Mm-hmm. As far as telling you how to play this
character? Yeah, and giving me advice and how I should approach things to be different. And he was so helpful, and I still wish I had him after that to kind of guide me. He was, you know, fantastic at the time, helping me out. And Truth was doing his entrance. I was in the ring as like a local talent. Just introduced me in the ring, and as they did with the local guys, Truth came out doing his shtick. As he stepped through the ropes, I kicked him in the head and beat the crap out of him. And no one had seen that before. They were just like, what is going on here? And I made a comment about, you know, everyone likes to party and hang out. Like, I ain't here to party.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, so Drew McIntyre doesn't party and the party's over.
Uh-huh.
That was my gimmick at the time. Soft-spoken, you know, aggressive demeanor, which is what my comfort zone. Like,
yeah, weren't you kind of doing something like that too? And then you also, at another point, you were kind of like the international playboy as well, or something along those lines, weren't you?
That was didn't really materialize. In FCW, I was.
Oh, okay.
When I was FCW champion, Dusty and I kind of came up with the gimmick where I wore the kilt and I was the playboy who parties all around the
you
world.
You would go to like Ibiza and these places.
Yeah, that
and
was
party.
FCW. So I was the champion there. Okay. That was fun. Like, that's, you know, a fun thing for me to do as well. Like, the serious, aggressive guy's fun. Like, that's, you know, showcasing what I can do to my best of my ability, but also like doing that, like the flamboyant party guy.
Sure.
Is also showcasing that outside of my personality and, you know, partially me in real life.
Yeah. So what went down with the Chosen One thing? How long did it last for, and why did it not go as far as it could have went, or you thought it should have went?
Well, started with Truth, went on to Morrison, became IC champion. I started a feud with Hardy, like Matt Hardy, without even any intention or their intention of it starting. Like, Matt and I did a spot during a tag match where he had his head on the stairs and I stomped it, and it looked so vicious, and he came in and sold it so well. Vince called the match in the match.
Wow.
It wasn't the finish, and he sold it so incredible. He looked like he was legitimately concussed out of his mind. I was worried he was for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, Vince had me attack him again. I rammed his head into the steps because I was thinking, okay, this is the route they're probably going. I was like, sorry, Matt. I grabbed him, ran his head, the back of his head into the steps, and then they started an angle from that. And, you know, Matt and I ended up having a fun feud and a fun series of matches. And then it was Kofi after that, and Teddy Long and I were feuding at the time, and inevitably dropped the title to Kofi, and probably the peak of the Chosen One push. The crowd were insane when Teddy Long made him put on the referee's shirt. He was counting the three, stopped at two. I ain't doing it, Drew. No, that was like, that was the peak of that gimmick, and like, that's when things started to go down from there, and unfortunately, it kept spiraling down.
Why do you think it went down?
You know, there's a lot of stories out there that aren't necessarily true, and what people believe. There's certain things I won't go into detail that when they were presented to the dirt sheets, I'll say, because they weren't picked up by anything else. They weren't picked up by TMZ. They weren't picked up by anything else because they were resolved instantly and caused by outside parties. And like, I guess things like that.
Are you talking about stuff with your wife or whatever it was? Or what do you?
Sorry, yeah.
I'm
referring issues. To like, things that are blown out of proportion.
Gotcha. With your ex-wife,
story,
I should say.
Things
ex-wife,
that were resolved instantly.
Right.
But made it onto dirt sheets, which obviously didn't make it to TMZ because they were resolved. And
gotcha.
I guess when you're in the boss's position, it doesn't look good for somebody that's supposed to go at the top of the company. I don't know if this was a factor.
It didn't help the Jed bad publicity or
no bad publicity
at the like, time with,
yeah,
with
any publicity is not good publicity.
With your now ex-wife who was a diva in the WWE at the time, Taryn. So
yeah.
That's kind of what we're talking about. Gotcha. Yeah.
But personally, like, I know when like myself, I wasn't the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
I know it wasn't. Like, that might have been a factor, but I know personally, like, it's a situation you can understand, like, with your mother.
Mm-hmm.
She had the accident and ended up in the wheelchair. Like, my mother was always my biggest supporter. She had a condition called ataxia, which is a balance disorder that only so few people actually get it.
Mm-hmm.
It came on in her 20s when she was with my dad. And she was told she would never have kids, etc. She ended up having me, said, screw you. And people said, get an abortion. Had me, had my brother, fought her whole life, broke her ankle, ended up having to be in a wheelchair eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Was fought through all that, was my biggest supporter, came to America, supported me the whole way. And during that time is when I found out she got sick with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And when that collapsed my world, like my mind, my personal life, everything just fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
When I found that out, that was the most important person in the world to me. And it was so hard being away, being such a family guy to begin with. And when
being
I found,
around the world, too.
Yeah, it just crumbled my world. And she, as I'd find out things about getting sicker, like we had, like WWE gave us such a important gift. I was able to bring my family to WrestleMania 1 year, and mom, dad, and brother. And we went to WrestleMania. I drove the car. We drove from Mania to the Raw, to the SmackDown, back home. We traveled like America together as a family, and that was the greatest family vacation I'll ever have, and I can't thank them enough for that, because inevitably when she passed, that was like the end of me. Like, I let a lot of things get to me personally. I might have not been the easiest to deal with at times. That might have affected how things were backstage, and I believe that was a strong factor.
What year was that?
It was, I found out about her being sick around about the time the push was starting.
So that was about 10, 11?
About the end of 9, 10.
9, 10, yeah. Because yeah. I remember that, yeah.
And yeah, it was just all the way through that, the sickness and the chemo and everything. It was horrible. I couldn't be there for her, and I knew how bad it was. And I knew how much everybody was struggling. That collapsed my world. And that's what I believe is the real reason how I might have been to certain people at times when I was dealing with all these things. I probably wasn't easy to deal with at times. I pride myself on being a nice guy, and everybody knows deep down I am, but I was struggling bad at that time.
And that's what we're talking about too, about as far as the travel and all the pressure and the stress, is it's not easy if you're mentally not 1,000% there. And who can be at all times, especially when you have actual family stuff, real world problems coming through? It's hard to keep that smiley face and keep that okay guys, that pomp and circumstance demeanor, that it's like if you come across to somebody like, oh man, he's being a jerk today, then suddenly you get heat or whatever the hell it is. Oh, yeah. It's hard to be 100% all the time. Hi, how are you? Oh, thanks God. For the opportunity, yeah. Guys.
I was the opposite of that during that period. And that probably, like, I believe that was the big factor.
Gotcha.
Over everything else, that was the big factor. Like how people probably talked to one person, talked to another person, they got to the bosses and told them however I was acting. And I can understand that, I guess, because I wasn't telling everybody what was going on. I was just dealing with it. And it was the hardest thing I've ever dealt with. And then inevitably when it happened, I didn't take enough time off. I was just, my world crumbled, to be honest. And it took a long time to pick myself back up. When I did pick myself back up, and all my friends like helped. I don't want to name everybody because there was so many people that helped. Obviously Seamus and Alberto Del Rio and Wade are there by my side the whole time. And getting me through things on these tours and stuff, Jinder Mahal. There's so many guys, I don't want to miss them, but everybody helped me get my stuff together. And eventually, when I felt ready, was when the injury cleared up, when 3MBE was still in mid-swing, I told everybody, okay, I know there's some issues in the past, it was hard to get over them, I've had a lot of things in my personal life that affected me massively, but I'm back, I'm 100%, I'll do whatever you ask, just looking for that opportunity to show you what I can do again, because, you know, I'm ready, I'm a man now. This was years ago, all these things happened, and you know, I had a lot of things to get over and deal with, and I dealt with them, got over them, and I was ready to go. And, you know, the opportunity didn't present itself at this time, but I know it will again, and I'm a different man. I'm actually a man now. I'm not a boy anymore.
That's something, too. You're just a kid, right? You grew up in this system.
Yeah, I grew up in WWE. I grew up in America and, you know, saw them almost like parent figures, which why it hurts as well. They were looking after me, and now they're not. I'm in the big, bad world, but sometimes you got to be released into the big, bad world to learn really how to become a man and come back a man. Like, maybe I'm leaving as a boy, maybe. I'll come back a man. I believe in the ring-wise, when I was between the ropes during that period, I gave it everything I could. I don't believe it hurt me in the ring, because that was the only time I ever stopped thinking about things. But out the ring, it hurt me. That was the major factor that I never talked about till now, pretty much, publicly. But that's what really hurt me.
It makes a lot of sense. Like I said, I totally agree and empathize with what you're saying, you know, and you mentioned Wade and Seamus. I know you were pretty tight with Alberto as well. Have they come through with some kind words, and have they been?
Oh yeah, they've,
you know, have your back.
Oh yeah, like not just them. So many guys have had my back. Right now, like everybody, pretty much. I can't even name everybody because so many guys on the roster tell me how they feel about working with me, and you know,
did it give you extra vote of confidence to know, like, wow, all these people care?
Yeah, like I guess in my head, I was like, you know, being honest, like, God, I wish they just felt that way. You know, I wish like the people, like the parent figures I have over here felt that way, that everybody else apparently does. And I remember, God, who was it? Magnum TA one time at a house show came along. You know, he's not doing too well at the time. It was a few years ago now. He came up, he watched me do a triple threat with a few of the guys. I was IC champion at the time. He pulled me aside and he was like, kid, you got something, you know, just keep going. And you know, Blackjack Lanza one time shook my hand, walked me to a wall, put my back against the wall from the middle of the room.
Breathe smoke in your face.
Yeah, that's like, I always think of Christian's impression of him.
You know, you're doing pretty good, Drew.
So like he walked me to the wall and just like, I like your stuff, kid. And I imagine in my head he was blowing smoke in my face, of course, going by Jay's stories. But yeah, so many people like gave me such a vote of confidence since this has happened. You know, I've always been confident in my ability to wrestle, to speak, to be put in situations like media and otherwise, to present myself in a good way for myself and the company. But right now I'm just going to explore those options.
What's your plans now? Like now that, okay, you've had a week, you're still getting over the shock, but now you kind of see there's this whole brave new world out there. What do you want to do now in your career that you have this new opportunity? Because that's what it is. It's an opportunity. At first, it looks bad, but in the big picture, it's a new opportunity for you.
I'm not sad. Like, I've had such a good time, and I say it over and over. I will be back. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to just show everybody what I can really do. I'm so fired up, beyond fired up. I love wrestling. I want to travel around as many shows as possible. I mean, like, I'm on a show. I'm not one of these guys who phone it in. I'm a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm bringing something not many people can bring. Like, I'm 6'5", 250, in shape. Like to think I can go pretty hard.
And years people, of experience.
Yeah, I can make people remember. And I plan to make a stamp all over America and the world. Like, I don't plan to stick just in America. I'll be back home, Japan, Mexico. I'll be all
over
the place.
Have you ever worked Japan before?
Just with WWE.
I think you'd do really good there in New Japan.
Like,
maybe.
I'm excited about the idea of, like, Japan. There's a few guys over there that are, I know they're pushing for me.
You talk to Harry at all?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And Fergal and, like, Albert and Rigo. And, like,
yeah, dude, you tailor-made for that.
They're, like, excited about the idea of me being there. It's just finding the right opportunity because they book well in advance.
And, sure. Yeah, but still. But
Japan is, like, where when I was watching, wrestling when I was younger, I was like, man, I'd love to go to Japan and WWE. I feel like I could just really tear up there. I want to tear through the crowd and throw chairs and terrify children, as well as make the girls scream when I get so close.
That's great. I know.
That's how I see myself in Japan, just having these crazy matches and just tearing through the crowd like a maniac.
And they're still like that there. I mean,
I know that. That's why I'm excited to go. It's like, I plan to be just unlike anyone else and just tear it up. And Japan is somewhere, my number one place I'm excited by the possibility of going.
You want to ever go back to, was it Abu Dhabi?
Dubai? Yeah, Abu Dhabi. God, you and I had a hell of a night in Abu Dhabi.
That was the best night, man. We went out, you had to take about a half an hour cab ride to go into the city.
Yeah.
And we went to some bar where there was a band playing from Montreal, and we met these Irish guys there.
Oh, yeah.
And, dude, who's tougher drinking, Scottish or Irish? I'll tell you right here, Drew destroyed these Irishmen.
Yeah, not that the guy remembered. Like, he kept challenging me to these drink competitions. And he's like, you can't beat me at the game of drinking. I was like, all right, mate, let's go. It was a competition. So they have these shots in Abu Dhabi where they set a glass at the bottom, a bunch of glasses upside down on top, and then light a shot in fire and stick a straw in the bottom of the glass when the drink filters through. And you got to suck the shot. So we start with that. I do that first. The guy, I forgot to mention, if you remember, it was the most interesting looking character ever. Hamburger meat for a nose.
He had the WC Field nose, but it was like a big red ripe tomato with, like, meat tracks on it.
That was unfortunate. So I beat him at that. I, like, went to the bathroom, came back. He bought me a pint of Guinness. I looked at him and went, oh, man, I don't want Guinness from Abu Dhabi. Like, it's going to taste like, I don't even know what. It's like, traveled too far from Ireland. And he's like, come on, we'll drink it. And I said, only if we down it. Said, I'll give you a race. Hey, I already beat you the first time. I was like, you'll never beat me at the game of drinking. Like, you said that the first time.
It's like Groundhog Day.
So we did it. I beat him again. And this continued about four or five times. And I think inevitably we went, like, back somewhere and partied with those guys. They were out of their minds.
Ended up in some room and they were still, he still kept saying, oh, never beat me at the game of drinking.
Never beat me at the game of drinking. I think by that time it sounded like, oh, yeah.
I think his friend had to carry him out and we were still standing going, what do you want to do? What else is next?
So that's a fun time.
It was a good time. It was one of my favorite trips, man. Speaking of favorites, what's one of your favorite match, if you had to pick one that you've had over the last few years?
God, like, I wish Sheamus and I had had a real match on TV to show everybody what we can do together. Like, he felt the same. Like, we have a written story, like, how long we've known each other.
Sure.
Like, it's unbelievable. And that's unfortunate. That hasn't materialized yet and hopefully will before he goes return.
Yeah.
But wrestling The Undertaker was mind-blowing.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I got the opportunity to do that. That just took my breath away. I entered after him, which I don't know if many people actually do.
Wow.
Was one of the few people that actually did that, and it was crazy. Just being in the ring with him right before he wrestled Shawn the first time. And, personally, one of the matches that mean the most to me is Double in Scotland gave me the opportunity to cut a promo before a match I had. And my parents were in the crowd, mom and dad, and I had them shine the spotlight on them, and I told a story about the night that the lights were a little low and the music was just right, and they got together, created Little Drew. in front of thousands of people. My mom was mortified, but WWE afforded me the opportunity to do things like that. And that meant more than anything because she's not with me anymore.
Right.
But yeah, like wrestling Taker and being in the Money in the Bank match, the original one as IC champion at WrestleMania, it was just so crazy. Winning the IC title, like there's a picture.
Who'd you win that from?
John Morrison, and it's one of my favorite opponents also. And we had like, God, there's so many guys I haven't wrestled, including you. Like, we had the opportunity, like in the right, not in 3MB, but in the right time and place.
Yeah, I never really had a chance. Yeah,
I was so jealous of everybody. Like, you had the opportunity just with your style. And
well, I mean, like you said, it's a whole new opportunity, and you never know what's going to come up. But the last question, you mentioned earlier that you never got a chance to say goodbye to the people in the WWE. A lot of those people listen to the show. Here's your chance, man. If you want to say goodbye to anybody that you missed out on, you can take some time right now.
Thank you. Everybody that I've not been able to speak to through text, the ones that have reached out, like, thank you. And everybody there, you know who you are. Everybody I talk to every week and say hello to, like, you're my family. I love you all. And I'll be seeing you very soon. So the little brother's got to go out and make an impact.
Well, I'm sure you are, man. Like I said, 6 months from now, we'll have you back on, and I'm sure things are going to be, it's going to be a whole new world for you, man. You know that I believe in you. That's why I wanted to have you on the show.
Thank you, Chris. That means a lot.
Absolutely. And all my fans feel the same way. People are blowing up that you're on the show today. And like I said, man, it's not the end of the world. It's just the beginning. You got a lot of big stuff coming up. So I'm really excited for you.
Thank you, Chris. That really means a lot. And to finish off, you got to join in with me because I've seen your show. Uh-huh. It's unbelievable, and like your new music is blowing my mind. What's the new song? Lights Go Out.
Yeah,
that is I'm not blowing smoke up your arse. Like I've told you when I saw Seamus and I came and watched you live, you're killing it. Like music wise, that's not just because I'm on your show and you've had me here.
No, you came and saw Fozzy in Tampa.
I came. I genuinely like your music, and you're doing a hell of a job. So to finish off, let's do one. Fozzy!
Oi!
Thank you, Chris.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Talk is Jericho.
Hey, thanks to Drew Galloway for joining me today. What a great guy. He's got the world at his fingertips. He's going to be a huge, huge star in pro wrestling for many years to come. SBIBookings.com. If you're looking to book Drew, go and check him out. Go see him when he's on the road. You're not going to feel left down. He's a great, great performer, and I believe in him. Thanks to all of you for listening. I know there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of podcasts to listen to on a daily basis, but I'm glad that you're here with me. And thanks for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. It's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links, Canada, U.S., and the UK. Okay. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. There's no extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. Go right now to Amazon through the Talk is Jericho page. Pre-order Do You Want to Start a War, the new Fozzy record out on July 22nd. If you pre-order it, take a screenshot, post it on the Twitter at Fozzy Rock. You can even go to @TalkIsJericho. We will follow you. We will follow you wherever you want to take us. And as a little bit of more goodwill, Drew was talking about the new song, Lights Go Out. Let's play it for you right now from the new Fozzy out on July 22nd. This is Lights Go Out right here on Talk is Jericho. Crank it up.
Just us colliding when the lights go out, we own the night.
you go. A treat just for you. The song that's burning up the charts. And thanks for all the love that you've been sending us in regards to Lights Go Out and Fozzie and Talk is Jericho. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much for being here. Have a great, great, great day. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And in the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another fun-filled edition of Talk is Jericho. Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.